Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure. And whatever comes our way.
Love embrace.
Born to be wild.
Born to be wild.
Scene.
We didn't forget any lyrics in there.
No, I remembered them all.
Yeah.
Let's go to the tape.
What's up, everybody? How's it? Welcome to another episode of the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lee Kwai.
And I'm Jake Boss.
So Jake is here filling in for Jimmy today. Jake, you're the post-production supervisor here at Command Zone, directs a lot of episodes of Game Nights, has a lot of editing, involved in everything we do. Also
the
best. Also, you probably recognize him from Extra Turns, although I don't know if anybody recognizes you right now, Jake.
No, I haven't. When I started Command Zone is when I grew the beard. Uh-huh. So,
but you shaved it off for charity.
I did, yeah. We were trying to make a goal, and somebody donated $200 to have me shave off my beard, so
worth
it. No-brainer.
Totally worth it, especially since most of the time we're wearing the mask, so you can't even tell.
Yeah, this is the time to get courageous.
All right. You're not here to hear about Jake's beard.
Yeah, enough about that.
We know you're here because Neon Dynasty is almost here, and it comes with two Commander precons that are being released at the same time as the main set. So today we've got the honor of revealing one of them, and we're going to go through all of the new cards in the deck. We're going to talk broadly about the reprints, reprint value. It is an Azorius Vehicles deck called Buckle Up, and it has 15 new cards in it that we're going to show off. And then, of course, you know, everybody likes the stats and everything, so we'll do that portion as well. But before we get into it, if you're interested in this deck or any cards from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, the best place to go to get all of your products, magic singles, anything at all, is channelfireball.com/command. If you use that affiliate link when you order your stuff, you are not only getting the cards you're going to buy anyway, you're supporting this channel and all of the content that you enjoy. And we keep saying this, but it is true. Channel Fireball really is... They have this marketplace now, and it's really the best place to buy sealed product. I've noticed specifically has really good prices on there because all of the vendors on there are LGSs, so they get really good prices from the distributor on their sealed product. It's not just like buying singles from a regular person that's like selling it. Like if you were selling, you could sell maybe on another marketplace, but on Channel Fireball, you need a business license, right?
Right.
And most of those places, they're in the WPN stores and things like that. So sealed product... very good prices, gets to you fast.
They've got those good connections.
Yeah, they got it exactly. And of course, once you get a hold of all that stuff, you are going to want to protect it. And Ultra Pro is the company we trust our own collections to. Here at the Command Zone, Jimmy and I have all of our decks in Eclipse sleeves. We put them in Satin Towers or Mythic Collection deck boxes. We use their dice. They have a new Eclipse dice, actually, that came out recently.
We've been
using those on game nights and stuff.
Yeah, they look really good on camera. And in the era of spell table and all that stuff, dice that look great on camera are a priority.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. If you're playing online or something, you want people to be able to tell what your dice say. And Eclipse dice are really, really good. So Ultra Pro making awesome products, as always. And of course, there's a final way to support all of our content, and it's directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You get all kinds of perks, like chatting with Jimmy, me, Jake, you're in there sometimes too, on our Discord. We're in there each and every day. And of course, you also get to do things like watch game nights and extra turns earlier than the general public. Our patrons also recently have gotten access to some exclusive footage that we've been putting on there, some exclusive videos that are only available on Patreon. We do not release them on our main channel. So if you want to check out all that we have to offer, patreon.com/commandzone. And of course, another perk is that we choose one patron every week at random and dedicate the show to them. And this episode is dedicated to Ethan Rodriguez. Ethan, you rock. Okay, let's get into it. Without any further ado here, this is the Buckle Up Commander Precon from Neon Dynasty. We are going to be doing the deck reveal. We're not going to do an in-depth analysis of every card. We know you just want to sort of see them. We'll probably comment on them a little bit. But we will be doing our normal budget upgrade video for this deck in another video. So
right. It'd be easy for us to get caught in the weeds on all the cool stuff, and we'll try to limit ourselves a little bit.
We'll do our best, but we're Magic players, so we're going to get excited, and there is some cool stuff in here. Okay, so there are 15 new cards in this deck, and that's something we've seen recently with Commander Precons from, I used to call these like set decks, the ones that come with the set, but they just kind of are Commander decks now, right?
Yeah, it's interesting that they no longer have that packaging like you'd saw with like the Zendikar and Kaldheim decks.
Right.
It's all just in the main Commander box now, and I wonder how that makes somebody feel when they pick up that box now.
Yeah, it makes it feel like a Commander deck, and I think with 15 new cards, they're way closer to, because usually like 18 to 20 is what we have seen from like C20 or C19 or the old school Commander products. So this is very close to that. There are three new legendary creatures in this box. So that's, again, what we used to see from Commander products. Two are in the colors of the deck, Azorius, and one is a monocolored Commander. So if you've been looking around online at all, you know that the box has been revealed and the main lead singer of the deck is Katori, has already been revealed, but we'll read it here. Do you want to read it, Jake?
Yeah, so Katori is a Moonfolk pilot. It's one, a blue, and a white for a 2/4. And it has vehicles you control, crew 2. At the beginning of combat on your turn, target artifact creature you control gains lifelink and vigilance until end of turn. So that's kind of cool that they just have crew 2. But notably, that doesn't eliminate the old crew cost.
Yeah, that's a good point that you brought up yesterday that I hadn't really thought about. But if you have, say, Smuggler's Copter or something, which, spoiler alert, is in this deck, it has a crew cost of 1. Katori won't make Smuggler's Copter worse. Right. It will not make it only have a crew cost of 2. They just, vehicles you control have crew 2. They still have their old crew cost as well. So if they were lower, you could crew it for the lower amount. Hopefully that makes sense.
And then obviously as a 2/4, this makes it so that Katori can fly anything like Poe Dameron.
Oh yeah, I can fly anything. Yeah, that's interesting and pretty cool. So if you've got a vehicle on the field that was there since last turn and you play Katori, you're right. Anything you've got could be crewed by Katori. Now, it's interesting, at the beginning of combat on your turn, so this only happens on your turn, that was something we missed when we were first talking about it, target artifact creature you control gains lifelink and vigilance until end of turn. Obviously, you know, from reading the card, it's supposed to be a vehicle that you give vigilance and lifelink to, which I think is a little bit awkward because it doesn't, you have to crew the vehicle, so you have to tap a creature, which will not get the vigilance part. So right. Sure, your vehicle won't be tapped, but that's usually not as important because you'd have to crew it again anyway.
This deck is going to need some untapped synergies
probably
later on in this episode, huh?
Spoiler alert.
For this to be worth it.
Yeah. I think Katori kind of pushes you in a way, and if you were building or adding pieces to the deck where you want vehicles that have like a high initial a low initial cost but a high crew cost,
because
it's sort of cheating of crew cost, right? So it doesn't do a lot if the vehicle already has a low crew cost. It does more if the crew cost is like 6 or 8 or something.
Yeah, something crazy up there.
Yeah, so you're probably looking for cards that cost less to cast initially but have a high crew cost. Okay, let's go to the second legendary creature in the deck. And spoiler alert, this is the card that I built my deck around for the upcoming Neon Dynasty episode of Game Nights.
And the animation for it is stunning.
Oh, yeah. So another thing Jake does here is he works with the VFX team and, you know, helps design and work on a lot of the animations we do for Game Nights. And yeah, I've seen this one. It is dope.
Yeah, let your imaginations run wild and tune in to Game Nights when it comes out.
Yeah, Game Nights is coming out at the time you're seeing this in about, 2 weeks? So
Yeah.
And we got some really cool guests for that one. So, all right, let's read the card, though. It is Shortikai, Genesis Engine. 2, a white and a blue for an 8/8 legendary artifact vehicle.
Oh, mama.
Yeah, this thing is a mech. If you look at it, it is going to fight a kaiju at some point, probably. It's got rules text. You pay 1, tap it, and draw 2 cards, then discard a card. Create a 1/1 colorless pilot creature token with this creature crews vehicles as though its power were 2 greater. And it has a crew cost of 8. And it says Shorokai Genesis Engine can be your commander. Because normally it's a vehicle, is not a creature unless crewed. It wouldn't be able to be in your command zone as your commander. But it has that text, which allows it. Lot going on here.
Is this a good card?
It's seeming
like kind of a good card.
When I saw it, I was like, yeah, that seems great. I mean, it's 4 on the front end to put out. But then pay 1, draw the best card out of your top 2, put 1 in the graveyard.
Yes.
So graveyard synergies. And create a 1/1 token. That is really good for a 1 cost effect on an artifact. Imagine it didn't have the crew or anything, and it was just like an artifact that said pay one tap to do that stuff, it would still be really good, right? And now
and you can use it the turn that it comes into play because it doesn't have summoning sickness just as an artifact.
Right.
When it becomes a creature, it will.
Right.
But you can activate the turn that you drop it.
So very powerful. And the pilots are interesting because, again, play into the vehicle theme. And remember, the pilots, they crew things as if they were three power when they're one ones. Mm. But if you increase their power, though, it'll, you know, if they're two twos, then they'll crew as if they were four power. So you can really crew some big stuff that way. Kind of overlaps, obviously, with what Katori is doing.
Yeah, this is, if you're playing Shorkai as your lead singer, you're really excited if you draw Katori, because that crew cost of eight is suddenly two. Ba-bam! I got an 8/8 with vigilance.
Now your pilots can crew anything, right?
And then I can activate. These two love each other.
And then there's one more legendary creature, which is a mono blue one, and it is Katsumasa, the animator. Two blue-blue for a 3/3 Moonfolk Artificer with flying. It has an activated ability, so you can pay two and a blue, and until end of turn, target non-creature artifact you control becomes an artifact creature and gains flying. If it's not a vehicle, it has base power and toughness 1/1 until end of turn, which is weird. But it says at the beginning of your upkeep, put a 1/1 counter on each of up to three target non-creature artifacts.
This is cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So you can obviously, anything that's not a creature on your upkeep, you're going to, or sorry, not anything. You're going to choose three of your artifacts that aren't creatures and put 1/1 counters on them. So you put it on your mana rocks and you put it on your vehicles, right? You haven't crewed them yet. Mm-hmm. So they are non-creatures. And then Katsumasa can turn those into creatures. If they're vehicles, they'll just keep their power and toughness. And that kind of, it's like three mana to crew them almost, but gives them flying. But also, you can turn like your mana rock that you put a 1/1 on, or 1/1 counter onto, into, well, basically be a 2/2 with flying at that point, right? Because it would become a 1/1 with flying and then get the 1/1 counter that you put on it. But over time, you probably get 2, 3, 4, maybe you play some proliferate, things like that. You can really turn your artifacts into beaters.
Yeah, this is a brewer's paradise because I'm sure people are already thinking about their Aetherflex reservoirs and their Ozoliths and all kinds of stuff that you can wake up and turn into something cool.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of all mana rocks because they provide mana to get you as many. So it's mana rocks, card draw, maybe a little proliferate. And then, because a lot of times if you have too much mana, you're looking around being like, I wish I could do something with all that mana.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a thing I can do with all that mana, turn them into creatures. And, you know, and over time I've been putting counters on them over and over. So seems like a pretty cool deck.
Yeah. In limited, we love mana sinks, but in commander, not as much. So this is a cool one to have an outlet.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense.
Those are the three legendary creatures, but don't worry. There are a whole bunch of non-legendary creatures that are new cards that are just coming out in this pre-con. The first one is, we were talking about it later, or we'll have you read it first.
Okay, this is Aerial Surveyor. It's 2 and a white for an artifact vehicle, and it has flying, and it's a 3/4. Whenever Aerial Surveyor attacks, if defending player controls more lands than you, search your library for a basic planes card and put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle, and it has crew 2.
Put it onto the battlefield tapped. We've seen this from white recently. They've been leaning into this a lot more, where sort of you can equalize with an opponent that has more lands in play than you. This is a sort of another version of that. I think it's a pretty good one.
It's pretty cheap for what it does. Like, you'd expect this around 4 mana in white.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's a 3/4 flyer, like, flying in commander becomes relevant more often than we think it does.
Yeah.
So the crew 2, you know, is an interesting way to balance, like, let's give this thing some stats, aggressively cost it, and kind of make it awkward, because vehicles can be kind of a dance.
Yeah.
But yeah, this thing can't swing the turn that it comes in.
Because it will have summoning sickness.
It is affected by summoning sickness.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're looking at like a turn 4 attack with this, realistically, right? I mean, maybe you get a turn 1 mana rock of something, but in general, I'd say we usually get a turn 2 ramp of some kind. So on turn 3, we have 4 mana. You play this, and then the next turn, you play something that can crew it and bash in, and you play it before you play your land drop, so that the first time is almost always you're able to get somebody that has more lands than you, because you just haven't played your land drop yet, unless you win.
And we're in blue-white, too.
Yeah.
So it's pretty likely that we're just artifact ramp and not very much land ramp. But
yeah, so unless you went first, you almost always can like just do this and then play your land for turn. After that, it becomes a little bit tougher. Somebody has to be ahead of you. You have to have a green player that's probably land rampering or something. So I don't know. Would you play this? You know, again, we're not going to evaluate a ton, but like, does this look playable to you in general?
Yeah, I'm interested in it. I'm interested to give it a try because it's a vehicle and it can hide from some creature removal.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty interesting. Talking about hiding from creature removal, good segue, Jake.
Oh, yeah.
All right, the next card is really cool. It's Imposter Mech.
I love this card.
1 and a blue for a 3/1 artifact vehicle. It has crew 3. Crew 3. But it says, you may have imposter mech enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature an opponent controls, except it's a vehicle artifact with crew 3 and loses all other card types. So this is a really interesting clone. And at first read, I think it's like, oh, it's worse, right?
Because yeah, this is lame. I want my thing.
It turns into a vehicle version of the thing. But then what you just said at the end of the last evaluation about dodges some creature removal.
Yeah.
So this can come in and become a copy of somebody's, you know, Oracle of Moldiah, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yes.
Just an effect that you want to have chilling out there, but it's going to get removed by something sometime soon.
But yeah, creature board wipe won't hit it. You don't care if Oracle of Moldiah is a creature, right? You just want to play an extra land and play lands off the top of your library. So you can get that effect. So all you need is your opponent to have a creature, Consecrated Sphinx.
Yep.
You know, so this kind of plays a little like Phantasmal Image, but sometimes better because it makes a thing that's actually harder to get rid of.
Yeah, it's an artifact too, so there's plenty of cheaper cards, you know, those costs.
Mm-hmm.
And things in this deck in particular that can bring back artifacts from the graveyard. Like, there's a lot of artifact love out there.
Yeah. So. So I really like this card a lot. I think it's powerful in general, not just in a vehicles deck. I think we're going to see this one sort of as another Phantasmal Image or. All right. The next one you said was your favorite card of the new cards.
Listen.
Is that true? Or am I just sticking to
you? Emotionally, it's my favorite. I know that this is not a great card, but I'm excited by tokens anytime. Access denied. It's 3 blue-blue for an instant counter target spell. Create X11 colorless Stopter artifact creature tokens with flying where X is at spell's mana value. We've seen this a lot. We've seen this with Spell Swindle.
Right.
Confirmed Suspicions kind of is like sure. that. But... I love stuff like this because it gets me a lot of tokens, and I like to use tokens for things that they're not made for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's exciting to me, but 5 mana, and you're not really sure what it is, how much value you're going to get out of it, it's kind of a risky include.
5 mana counter spells are pretty tough. We've seen Spell Swindle, which is like a mana drain variant, just not be that great. You know, Jimmy and I thought it was going to be awesome, and then it turned out to be you never really see it. You have to have a lot of instants in your deck for a card like this to be playable because you have to have other options because you don't know if anybody's going to play a spell that's large enough that this you're willing to spend right. 5 mana to, you know, because for the extra 3 mana, right, counter spells cost about 2 mana, and that's what we're willing to pay. For the extra 3 mana, you have to get enough 1/1 Thopters that feels like a good deal. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to get? Probably 2 or 3?
Honestly, I would want at least 4 out of something
to like feel this. Good about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we're in a world we've been talking about a lot where just the CMCs of decks are lower. People are playing less like 7-drops and stuff. So you're less likely to sort of catch a really huge break with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At 5 mana in this deck, you want to be doing something else.
Yeah. But I think in a deck where there are a lot of instances, this could be good because you just go, oh, nobody casts anything big. I'll do this other thing. All right. The next one is Cyber Drive Awakener. 5 and a blue for a 4/4 artifact creature construct. Has flying, says other artifact creatures you control have flying. When Cyberdrive Awakener enters the battlefield, until end of turn, each non-creature artifact you control becomes an artifact creature with base power and toughness 4/4.
Holy moly.
Yeah, so it gives everything, it turns everything into creatures, all your artifacts into creatures, and gives them flying just for a turn, but this is a game, this is a finisher, right?
Yeah, you don't drop this until you're ready to win the game, and by the time you've done that, you've got so many cool artifacts out there, and everybody says, what on earth deck are you playing?
And then you go, the one where I kill you with flyers.
Oh, bam.
Also,
slam dunk.
Also, you could just go Dockside Extortionist.
That's true.
And then... I have 27 treasure, turn them all into 4/4s with flying, I win.
Oh my god.
That's yeah, because
treasure is everywhere.
Yeah. So hold on to those treasures. You got to be really careful if somebody's got a lot of treasures, clues, food, stuff like that. A card like this will just win. All right, the next one.
Next one is Iron Soul Enforcer. It's 4 and a white for an artifact creature, Human Samurai. Whenever Iron Soul Enforcer or a commander you control attacks alone, return target artifact card from your graveyard to the battlefield, and it's a 4/4.
Graveyard to the battlefield and no CMC restriction. We're used to seeing that on white. This is any artifact. And I like that it says, or a commander you control.
Right, so you don't have to wait. It doesn't have that ETB of Sun Titan, but it does let you use it the turn that you play it.
Yeah, it's only artifacts, so I don't know. Like, Sun Titan can get lands, which is a pretty big deal.
That's true.
But still, yeah, I agree with you. You play this and then attack with your commander, you get the trigger, and you're cheating mana cost. Like, if you have something huge or crazy that's an artifact in your graveyard, it's coming onto the battlefield.
Yeah, that's nutty.
Yeah, so I actually think this card is pretty good in the right spots. The you I wouldn't count on getting a lot of triggers from it, but the one can be enough, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, four and a white is kind of a lot, but it's a 4/4 body. It, you know,
yeah,
it's worth and checking out.
They do kind of got to get rid of it.
Yeah,
like you attack, you get an artifact back on the battlefield. They're not going to be like, well, let's just let them get another artifact back next turn.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're going to have to put a stop to it. So that even actually can be advantageous. That yeah. like yeah. Yeah, Meteor Golem. Oh boy, that's a good one. Meteor Golem with a sack outlet, and just
and then you're just looping it.
All right, we've got a few more left. The next one is Kappa Cannoneer, 5 and a blue, 6 mana for a 4/4 Turtle Warrior artifact creature.
The turtles will rise up.
Yep, it's a turtle with a cannon on its back, kind of, or maybe a jet engine. Anyway,
it looks like a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
It looks like from Kung Fu Panda, the Master Shifu or whatever.
Yeah,
it's a 6 mana 4/4, 5 and a blue. Has improvise though. Your artifacts can help cast this spell. Each artifact you tap after you're done activating mana abilities pays for one colorless or one generic of this. It has ward 4, so if you target, if it gets targeted with anything from your opponents, they have to pay 4 more counters to the thing targeting it. And then it says whenever an artifact enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on Kappa Cannoneer, and it can't be blocked this turn.
And that's not limited to this once per turn stuff that we've been seeing lately either. So,
oh yeah, interesting.
That's going to be anytime I get a treasure in, it's going to be boom, 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 boom. And if somebody plays this on game nights, we're going to have a lot of work to do in the animation of it.
Oh boy, no, just bleep, 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 bleep.
It'll just keep triggering. It's one of those Tori Mahler things
to do. Well, oh yeah. Once again, Dockside Extortionist looks pretty good because it doesn't say non-token artifact.
Right.
Smothering Tithe with this, pretty good.
And the Ward 4 doesn't say hexproof. Okay.
Right.
But it certainly close. Might mean it. Yeah.
It's pretty close.
4 is a lot.
Yeah. So this thing's going to get big, fast, and be unblockable, and you're going to want to put it in a deck with a lot of artifacts anyway because of the improvise.
Right.
Seems like it could be a bit of a beater.
Yeah.
All right. Then it's your turn, I think, to read. We've got how many left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, no number.
Okay. Organic Extinction. It's 8 white-white. Holy crap. It's a sorcery with improvise. Destroy all non-artifact creatures. So again, we can reduce the cost with our artifacts.
Yeah. So if it's an artifact-heavy deck, just destroys all of your opponent's creatures and hopefully not yours.
Yeah, hopefully. When all of your vehicles are awake too, because you can already crew your dudes and, you know.
I like the idea of vehicles being awake.
Yeah.
As opposed to asleep. Yeah,
my car
either way, they can be
the
awake or asleep, but either way, they're not going to die because they're either not creatures or they're artifact creatures.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see another board wipe out there. I'm sure that this is really useful in that deck, like whatever that deck is.
Right?
But yeah, exactly.
It's the deck that has, like, you know, almost all of your creatures are artifact creatures.
Right. There's definitely a deck that loves this, but we have so many board wipe options now.
This could be a really good board wipe option in a deck that just doesn't have a lot of creatures and just playing a lot of artifacts as something that I'm just going to cast for a white-white and we'll destroy. Even if it said destroy all creatures, I'd still play it just because my deck doesn't have a lot of creatures. That might be a thing. All right. So the next one is Research Thief. 4 and a white for a 3/3 artifact creature.
4 and a blue, Josh.
Sorry. 4 and a blue. 4 and a blue. Did I say white?
You did.
My bad. 4 and a blue for a 3/3 artifact creature. Moonfolk Wizard has flash and flying. And it says, whenever an artifact creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card.
Huh.
I think this reads pretty good. And then you start thinking. And then you go, but what about Biden of Thassa?
Yeah.
What about Coastal Piracy?
Yeah.
What's the cycling one that came out recently? Whatever that one's called. There's a lot of this effect, and it's, I know this has flash and flying, so you can flash it in. It should get in the next turn, draw you that card. Moldrifter also costs 5 mana and just draws you 2 cards with no attacking. It doesn't have flash, but I just feel, and this is restricted to only artifact creatures doing the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of see, this is again that deck syndrome, where this works really well in the deck that it works really well in, but
pretty narrow.
Yeah, that's probably the course of development in Magic is a lot more of that deck type cards.
Narrow stuff, yeah.
All right, next card, Universal Surveillance. It's X, blue, blue, blue for sorcery with improvise. Draw X cards. I'm kind of interested. I think it's all right. I know you're kind of cool on this card.
It needs instant speed to be good.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, just Brain Geyser already kind of exists. I know this has improvise, so maybe in some spots is a little better, but the sorcery speed has made me take Outburn Geyser out of most decks, and I'll play Stroke of Genius because instant, so you can kind of wait and see if anything scary happened, and then on your end step you feel safe to like spend all your mana because you're about to untap.
Right.
So I think this would probably be too good if it was an instant though, so they kind of had to build it this way.
I think that's a really good point, is the play pattern with a card like this is you want to get maximum value out of it, so you pass the turn, hold up all your mana, and then ba-bam, slam dunk this spell onto the table.
Right.
And everybody thinks you were going to counter something, but really... you wanted to do this all along.
So you're saying if you have Vedalken Orrery or Leyline of Anticipation in your deck, then maybe you should play this card.
Okay, it's always saying? The same thing with you.
All right, the next card is pretty juicy. This is pretty spicy. This is probably my favorite one of the whole in the whole box. It's Drum Bellower. 2 and a white for a 2/1 creature spirit.
Okay.
With flying. It says, untap all creatures you control during each other player's untap step.
Oh!
So it's White's Seedborn Muse. I know it's not exactly the same, because Seedborn Muse is all permanents, but also costs 5 mana. This is only 3.
I mean, a little awkward with our vehicles. That's because you can't crew it.
Well, the thing that crewed it, though, gets to untap.
Right, so the guy gets to jump out the car, but the car is now asleep.
Well, no, you don't tap the card. It works with Katori really well because they have Vigilance. Mm-hmm. So you attack with Vigilance, then you untap on their turn the whatever piloted it or crewed it, and then it can crew it again, and so you kind of get...
Yeah, but, exactly. Whatever, like with Katori, whatever. That's cool.
Yeah.
But that's not the deck that you're excited about this card for.
No, this with like mana dorks and stuff is what I'm talking about. Or like somehow adding White to my Tim deck so that you like every turn you can do that. Yeah, that.
Or the
that
Amara Tandris, the tappy one.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I love tap effects and just being able to... Yeah, everybody's turn. It's not just, you know... It's everybody's untap step you're untapping. Yeah.
He was very seriously considering adding White to the Tim deck just for this card.
What do you mean was? I am.
Okay.
I'm still thinking about it. I probably will.
Yeah.
Maybe I just go full 5-color now.
We got to finish the podcast.
Okay. Y'all. Sorry. All right. We got 2 left. 2 new cards.
All right. Next one is Release to Memory for 3 and a white. It's an instant. Exile target opponent's graveyard. For each creature card exiled this way, create a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token. I kind of like it.
Yeah, this is interesting, and it's right on the edge, right? Because it's 4 mana,
yep.
But it is an instant, so you can hose somebody when they go to target something with like a reanimation spell of some kind.
Yeah, this is like a lot of effects put together.
Yeah.
So we're really easy to start imagining like a Carador situation, right, where we're like, yeah, against that deck it'd be amazing, or against this player in my play group, it's great. So long as they're bringing out those decks. But it's not a toolbox. I'd say
most pods have... Almost every pod you play in will have some amount of graveyard recursion going on, even if there's not like a dedicated graveyard recursion deck, although those do exist. So you're going to be in pods sometimes where like that is what the deck is doing, in which case this is a silver bullet against them sometimes. But I do like the fact that like even in situations where, okay, nobody's really playing around with their graveyard much, it does have a use. It will still give you the 1/1 tokens for, you know, now stuff has to die and get in the graveyard. And
at instant speed, too. So somebody might be coming at you for the win, swings at everybody for exact season. You got another turn.
Yeah, and you go, boom, I create, you know, exile your graveyard, create 4 1/1s, and I live. Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to need 6 to kill me. Yeah, that would do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, okay. They're like, oh, I'll attack you with 7 just to be safe. Boom, create 4 blockers. Ha! Ah. So I think this is okay, but 4 mana is a lot. So it's not going to go in maybe every deck, but I think people don't play enough graveyard hate. And the reason is because it feels really bad when it's not useful. Like, you're like, well, what if there's no... I don't need that. At least this does have sort of a second use as, like, the creating the tokens.
Yeah, a 4-mana instant speed, raise the alarm.
Yeah.
Whatever, okay.
But if it hoses a graveyard right when somebody's going to use their graveyard to, like, defeat you in some way, that could be great. Because people go, like, Snapcaster Mage or Torrential Gearhulk or something. You're like, no, let's not do that. Okay. This is the last card? No, we got... Yes, this is the last card.
This card is cool.
All right. This is interesting, yeah. You liked it more than I did at first, and I think you brought me up on it.
I'm excited about it.
It's called Swift Reconfiguration. 1 white mana for an enchantment aura with flash.
Right.
Enchant creature or vehicle. Enchanted permanent is a vehicle artifact with crew 5, and it loses all other card types.
So this is everything we loved about Imposter Mech at instant speed. It's an enchantment. So in my Enchantress deck, I'm drawing cards. I'm hiding my... Like, imagine somebody drops a removal spell or a board wipe that says, destroy all creatures, destroy all enchantments. Ba-bam! Guess what? Sithis is now a vehicle. You can't target it.
Right. So he jumped straight to the clever usage of the card, which is target your own creature.
Yeah, I kind of got ahead of ourselves there. But
bam, we got
so
excited.
It's so exciting.
So, yeah, that I didn't really think about that.
Because
yeah,
it looks like a removal spell.
I mean, I think it is, right? I think primarily...
Probably.
That's the primary usage, which is they have a big, scary creature, and you make that creature hard to utilize by saying you have to crew five it. Or Blightsteel Colossus.
Blightsteel, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. They're like, you're like, okay, that thing's going to attack. It's going to do some damage. It's going to suck. And you're like, boom, put this thing on it. Now you have to crew five it just to get it going, which a lot of times...
You clear a path on the blockers, too.
Yeah. Which a lot of times will make it so that they can't attack with it this turn, which is kind of all you need. But I like the fact that it does have this backup usage, which is people go to like board wipe. You go, okay, cool. My key creature, whatever that is, I'm going to turn it into a vehicle. So it's not a creature right now, hasn't been crewed, and it will not dive, you know, to your Supreme Verdict or whatever.
It's just like in Spider-Man where Tony Stark is scolding Spider-Man. And then guess what? I'm not even here. I'm on vacation. Swift reconfiguration.
It's just like that.
Yeah, it is. I've seen the film.
But yeah, somebody goes a path to exile your thing. You can also just be like, boom, yeah. I turn it into a vehicle artifact. Does Path of Exile, does it work on artifacts? No, it does not. It has to be a creature. So this fizzles. Yeah. So it kind of can serve dual usage. I do like that. For one mana, that feels like a card we may see more often than I originally thought.
Yeah, I think it's nifty.
Okay. So... we wanted to do a little vehicle analysis on this deck, and I want to thank Truck, my assistant, for helping us with a lot of the statistics and the research for this deck. So before Neon Dynasty, there were only 38 commander legal vehicles, of which 34 can be played in an Azorius deck. So the main Neon Dynasty set has now been revealed and has another 13 vehicles, 12 of which can be played in an Azorius deck. So in total, there are 49 commander legal vehicles that can be put into this deck. Now, of course, some do already come in the deck because, you know, it's a pre-con, and we just talked about 15 new cards, but there's a bunch of reprints. And that is how we segue into our reprint stats, where we go over the value of all the reprints in the deck. And that's one of, I know, everybody's favorite parts. How much value is packed into the Buckle Up pre-con? Well, don't get excited just yet. We're going to take a quick break here. A message from our sponsors. We'll be right back with all those stats, though.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
All right, we are back. We are talking about the Buckle Up, the blue-white Neon Dynasty Commander Precon that's built around vehicles with Katori at the helm. We didn't talk about this in the last section. It's possible that it might be better to run Shordekai as the commander of this deck right out of the box. Sure. Yeah, I think that value is just insane. And Shordekai also works with all your vehicles because it makes those pilots, which are basically doing what Katori is doing anyway. So the question is, would you rather draw two and discard one or have Lifelink and Vigilance on your vehicle?
I think 100% I want to be drawing cards, especially in a pre-con. Are you kidding me? I need bodies on the field. I need
to hit my land drops. I need to find my best cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, now let's go into... We're about to go into reprints, but we're going to go real quick into...
stats.
The deck stats. Pretty good on this one. There are 10 ramp cards in the deck, 13 card draw cards, 9 targeted removal, and 2 board wipes. This is really lining up with the new commander deck building template and how we've kind of leaned towards more targeted removal, less board wipes. I think the ramp's teeny bit low, but it's what we used to like in the, I'll call them the old days. I think now we want somewhere more along 12 to 14 ramp cards, but it's in the range, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting that these stats are so aggressive. I really actually like the balance of targeted removal versus board wipes.
Yeah. It's just that's the way the whole format's been leaning, right?
It is, yeah, and I think when you consider the pre-constructed deck, you know, if I recommend this deck to my cousin who's getting into this game, I don't want him to have three board wipes in hand and be like, do I just kill my whole thing I've been working toward.
And also, I think, you know, in the old pre-cons, it could feel like, oh, they played this and I just had nothing in my entire deck that could do anything about it.
Right.
And now you have answers to stuff. So that feels good.
I like the balance.
All right. Other related stats. There are 55 artifacts or artifact support cards in the deck. There are 18 vehicles or vehicle support cards in the deck. 15 actual vehicles. And there are 5 graveyard recursion, like bring your artifact back stuff, which is a little low for the Shorokai argument, but still. Yeah, so I don't know. That seems all good. Seems like it's properly weighted, right? It's very artifact heavy.
It's got to be really hard to balance a vehicles deck.
Yeah.
And to figure out how many regular creatures am I going to need to be able to crew these suckers. And I think that's why Shorokai is kind of a short thing.
Yeah, because it's just going to, move you through your deck and let you find your best cards. Okay. I know. Everybody's waiting for financial value. We're on the financial value section. Congratulations. All right. Remember, all prices we're going to talk about here are taken prior to the deck being revealed because we don't have a time machine. So we're the ones revealing it. We can't really do this at the same time as the time we're revealing it. All right. But we always do this so we can compare the past prices to the current ones because we always take the price from before the decks are revealed. The total reprint value of this deck, hold your breath, everybody. It is $53.42.
The crowd goes mild.
I think even worse. I think there's probably like a disappointment from that number. It's low, right?
Yeah, it's not good, especially since, you know, the expectation is that the price will probably go down maybe.
Oh, it's definitely going to go down as far as the reprint value, right? Because as soon as you announce that you are reprinting a lot of this stuff, the price of it goes down. So, I mean, remember, we have to be clear. That price does not take into account the new cards in the deck, and there are 15
there's a lot
of them. Yeah, so that could bring the value of the deck up after, all said and done. We just, again, because the cards just got revealed, 10 minutes ago, we don't know what the prices on those cards are going to be.
Yeah, but like a lot of the slots just might be taken by these new cards that don't get a reprint value assigned to them.
Still, we do this all the time, and every time we do it, we only calculate the reprint value. We don't calculate in the new cards. And usually, here's what the reprint values kind of look like.
Right.
For Commander 2019, the average reprint value of those decks was $80. For Commander 2020, that was the Ikoria Commander, the average reprint value was $96. For Commander 2021, Strixhaven, the average reprint value, $88. For Commander 2021, the Forgotten Realms Commander Precons, the average reprint value was $115.
Holy moly.
For the Midnight Hunt Precons, lest you think it was only Commander product we were talking about before, right? This is set decks again.
Yeah.
Midnight Hunt Precons, average reprint value, $103. So, $53.42, this deck is way on the low side. In fact, we checked, since we've been doing these stats, this deck has the lowest reprint value of any precon ever.
Huh.
The previous worst was Spirit Squadron from Crimson Vow, which was $56.06. And the worst before that was Phantom Premonition from Kaldheim, which was $61.35.
You might need some soul searching here to ask yourself, why am I buying this deck? Because for me, I think the convenience fee of a little bit lower reprint value for a deck that's, you know, assembled and ready to go out the box at a certain power level, I think that's worth something. But at the same time, you know, history, this doesn't line up with it.
Yeah, I'm disappointed by the reprint value, and I thank Wizards of the Coast for allowing us to preview this deck and show it off to everybody, but I'd be remiss if I said that $53.42 was acceptable, because it's not, and it would be so easy to fix it. You could fix it with a singular card. Like, let's just imagine we found like a $25 or $30 card, like Vedalken Orrery, let's say. Just replace one of the low value reprints in this deck with that deck, and all of a sudden we're up to about $80, and everybody's fine and happy. You know, whatever the equivalent of that is, or two, you know, $15 cards. Mm-hmm. It's easy to fix this number, and honestly, I don't think you could hit the randomizer on Scryfall. How many reprints are in this deck? 51. I don't think you could hit the randomizer on Scryfall that many times and come up with a lower value total than this. Like, just by accident, you would find like a $20 card, an $8 card. So it seems almost like on purpose. And I understand that vehicles themselves are underutilized.
Sure. Yeah, but that argument kind of falls apart if you say, well, Vidalc and Orrery would just make the whole deck better.
Yeah, just replace one of the support cards. You don't have to replace
There's a bunch of cards, not just Vidalc and Orrery,
yeah,
that could easily be printed into this deck. That would make the deck better. Like, that's just like a good stuff card.
Yeah. So I think, you know, precons are still cool and always a cool idea if you like the deck archetype and everything. But yeah, that reprint value, I just don't think there's any way to color it but besides just disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about the major reprints in the deck, though. There is, we always break it down into cards that are $5 or more and then cards that are $2 or more. We can't go into every card from the deck. There will be a link in the show notes to a WotC webpage, which will have the full deck list. Mm-hmm. But we're going to hit the highlights here. There is only one card in this entire deck that, again, before we revealed the deck list, was worth over $5. And it is...
Mirage Mirror. It's a neat card.
I mean...
It's kind of fun.
It's a really good card.
You've been dunked on by this card before.
Yeah. I mean, this is a very good card. I think probably not enough people play it, despite us sort of championing it for many years now. Yeah. About $6 at the point we're recording this. That's it, though.
I would have expected that card to be worth more because it's so good.
But. Right. It's from a modern set, though. There was a lot of print, and it was a rare, not a mythic, so... Mm. I mean, for comparison, the Midnight Hunt Undead Unleashed precon had four cards over $5.
Yeah.
This has one.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. Okay, let's go into cards that are $2 or more. There are seven of those. Psy, Master Thopterist. Makes sense. Makes 1/1 flyers.
Mm-hmm.
It's an artifact payoff. Felwar Stone. Oh, sorry. Psy was about $4.50. Felwar Stone, $2.80. Generous Gift, $2.80. I'm glad to see that get reprinted because that goes in like a lot of decks.
Hard to believe that's so high.
Yeah. Spire of Industry, $2.67. Smuggler's Copter, $2.65. Emry, Lurker of the Lock, $2.60.
Man, Smuggler's Copter being that cheap is funny. Like, yeah. I remember after my first big editing job, I went to go buy my playset of Smuggler's Copter before the ban.
Right, because then it got banned from Standard.
It was like, 20 bucks each. Yeah. $2.
So that's all seven cards that are over $2. For comparison, the Crimson Vow Vampiric Bloodline precon had 10 cards over $2. I will say that Soul Ring and Arcane Signet sometimes make these lists of over $2, but they've been reprinted enough. Now they're both about $1.50.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, the same list might have those two cards on it, though. I'm going to read the deck contents here because I think it will give us a clue also as to why the reprint value is so low, which is a head-scratcher. So the deck contents are 15 new cards, 51 reprints, and 30
Ooh.
Basic lands.
Wow.
30 basic lands?
I think it's interesting. Okay, so I think we looked at it, and there's one land that comes untapped, and it's Temple of Enlightenment.
Yeah, there's a few dual lands, but not many, right? Because if you've got 30 basic lands in the deck, there's like six or seven, maybe five, because you're going to have around 36, 37 lands in the deck that are... lands that aren't basics.
Like, they certainly could have included lands that come in untapped that are dual lands, like the Battle for Zendikar land. But I think this might be a very clear effort.
I think they did have the Battle for Zendikar, the have lands. I think they that one, Prairie Stream. I think it's in there. But yes, they could have done like, well, if you're only at $53.42 on your reprint, you know, amount, why not put a pain land in there? Shoot, you could have a shock land. You could have a Hollowed Fountain in this thing, and it would still only be like a $70 value for the deck, right?
They printed that in the Brawl decks even. Like, so, they were willing to do that.
Yeah, so the, like, what's the last deck you built that wasn't mono? Even a monocolor deck usually doesn't have 30 basics, right? 30?
Yeah, like, you'd have some utility lands in there.
You usually have a lot, you know?
Yeah, like, if the argument is that we want lands that come in untapped, I don't think it holds up.
There's plenty of choices that will still meet that criteria, but also be, like, utility lands and useful things. 30 basic lands just feels like that's one of the causes of the problems for why this deck's reprint value is so low. So, disappointed by that basic land count. I think the new cards, a lot of them are cool. I'm excited about that, the one that untaps all my creatures on everybody else's turn. But yeah, the reprint value is just hard to get past. I'm pretty disappointed by it.
Yeah. I think that the artifact nature of this deck might be why we see less dual lands, or why we're justifying not putting those dual lands in there.
No, because
I'm not saying this is a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm actually saying... That's interesting that you said that. I didn't even think about that. But you want less basics in a deck that has more artifacts because you need less color.
Yeah.
So you can have more you know,
Utility lands.
Utility lands that just like, you know, Inventor's Fair and stuff like that. You can afford to run more of that stuff.
Command because, Beacon.
Yeah, you don't care as much. And some of those are worth a dollar or two and could bring our reprint value up. So yeah, it's a real head scratcher that this is the mana base that they chose to go with this thing, especially when the reprint value was already a little bit low. So anyway, that is the deck. You can find the, or that's not the whole thing. All the rest of the reprints will be listed in the show notes. There'll be a link in there if you want to check them all out. To the listeners, what do you think of this deck? Are you excited about it? Are you excited to build a vehicles deck? You know, something we kind of glossed over a little bit was, yeah, there wasn't really a vehicles commander
right
before this. I guess there was, what's the dwarf one?
Dipala.
Yeah, Dipala. So there wasn't one that had white and blue. So that's pretty cool. I think I like that aspect of it. And
yeah, you really want that blue for the untappiness.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Blue. Because tapping is such a large part of crewing in vehicles. So, but anyway, we want to know from you out there what you think of the deck. What cards, what new cards do you think slot into this deck, or old cards? Like if you were going to build around Katori or Shordekai a whole deck, hey, put in the comments what you would want to put in that deck, because we're going to be doing budget upgrades soon and we could use the help.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a confusing deck. I think head scratcher is definitely the word. Like, I would say, I don't know what I expected.
When I built my Shorokai deck for Game Nights, I will say that it is hard to build a vehicles deck.
Yeah.
Like, as you get into it, it's like, because you there's a lot of moving pieces to what you want to do, and getting a proper balance and not being like, well, what if I don't draw this part of the deck, then my deck will just sit there? Like, it makes it pretty tough. It's a lot of, like, building, like, an equipment deck.
Yeah.
All right, if you want to get your hands on the Buckle Up deck, or there is another Commander Precon, I'm not sure how much of it at the point you're watching this has been spoiled, so we won't spoil anything, but there are two. You can order those if you want to get a Collector's Booster or a Draft Booster, Set Booster, anything like that. If you want to just pre-order singles from these cards, which might be a good idea from this deck specifically, channelfireball.com/command is the place to go to get all of your Magic stuff and any gaming accessories and things like that you want. They also have that. Their new marketplace is great. A lot of vendors vying for your business, keeping the prices low. You can also, and I always forget to mention this, but if you don't remember to put in the affiliate link when you go to that page, you can put in the code command at checkout.
Ooh.
Which has saved me on a number of occasions. So you're welcome, everybody.
It really is that easy. Josh.
Yeah. Yeah. And then once you get those cards, make sure that you protect them. Ultra Pro is the company that we here at the Command Zone use and trust for our own personal collections to make sure that we're keeping our game pieces safe. You cannot beat the Eclipse sleeves. You cannot beat the Satin Tower deck boxes. They also have all the Neon Dynasty, the Kamigawa themed stuff. So you can get artwork on your sleeves from Kamigawa. You can get playmats, deck boxes,
they
all that
so
stuff.
So cool, too. Oh,
and yeah, this set has some of the best art we've ever seen, right?
Yeah, like when we're putting playmats together for game nights, I'm always thinking about, are we going color scheme and stuff? Crimson Vow kind of had that going on real nice, but Kamigawa is next level on the Ultra Pro mats.
Yeah, that stuff was like, you looked at all the art and you're like, this, I don't care. These are just all look amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, now it's time for the end step. Oh, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. Jake, don't look so panicked, but it is your job.
Oh, I'm not worried about this.
To come up with a cool thing.
Well, as a creative, I can pull things out of my hindquarters very quickly. And so one thing that I love is, you know, I'm a director here.
Well, I know what you're going to talk about.
Do you?
Maybe I'm wrong. Go ahead.
Okay. So as a director here at Game Nights, we, you know, love reality TV.
Oh, okay.
And vintage reality is a genre that I'm coining. This is a new term that everyone will use.
It's going to make me feel old.
But basically, there's so much vintage reality TV on YouTube where it's uncensored because they go back to the original tapes. And what show better to watch uncensored than Hell's Kitchen or Kitchen Nightmares? But basically,
so they don't bleep out Gordon Ramsay or whatever.
Gordon Ramsay is not bleeped out, and it's like watching a brand new show. Yeah. So we've been watching a lot of that stuff because it's so much fun to like have context.
Where do you find it on YouTube? Do you just type that in, or is there a certain channel that's like?
Yeah. So the Kitchen Nightmares YouTube channel, for a lot of reasons, is really funny. I think every other day for the last year or so, they have a Gen Z kid naming all the videos, so it's like when the food's not bussin', stuff like that. So the Kitchen Nightmares YouTube channel, and I think there's a Gordon Ramsay YouTube channel, but yeah, if you're into vintage reality like I am,
we have to call it vintage reality.
You do. These people were paving the way in a way that we get to benefit on every single day. They deserve their credit.
That we directly benefit off of, because Game Nights is a reality show.
Yeah, we borrow conventions and, you know, like, You watch The Real World from 1993. Those people were paving the way
for
game nights. They didn't know it at the time.
All right. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone. Arthur Meadowcroft, Shauna Gillis, Damon Lenz, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, who's sitting right next to me, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, Jamie Block, Evan Limburger, and Mitch Trafford. And special thanks to Truck Ty for compiling all the stats and helping us out with all the numbers and everything for this episode. And also a shout out to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations that begin our show and often sit behind us here on set, although Sam Waldo did this one.
Soul Ring at the beginning.
Yeah.
Fancy.
So you can find Jeffrey on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. All right, Jake, thanks for helping me break it down.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks everybody out there for watching, and we will see you next time.
Peace. Bah, 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 bah.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.